Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello and welcome to the second edition of Speaking Insights, brought to you by NSA Georgia and Business Radio X. I'm your humble host, Desmond Thornton, and I have the pleasure of having to my left here,
Kelly Vandiver.
And if you guys remember from last show, Kelly was a guest on the show, and she did so well that we invited her back, and now she's a host. So as you can see here at Speaking Insights, there's opportunity for a promotion. We have two great guests with us today. When I was a kid in my teens, I used to always be envious of interviewers on television, CNN and the other shows, because I thought those people had the greatest jobs. Number one, they got to be on television. And then number two, they got to speak to some of the most popular people in the world. And so today I am living a dream because I am talking about something I love, which is speaking. And I have the pleasure of being with two giants in the speaking industry, Mr. Ken Futch and Mrs. Martha Lanier. Now, when I say giants, I don't mean in size. I mean in stature here. So, Ken and Martha, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
We'd like to go on a journey with you today through your speaking career. And our audience is a wide range audience, from beginning speaker to more seasoned speakers. And hopefully you'd be willing to share your evolution with us. And along that journey, we hope that we can pick up some nuggets that will be useful for our guests. So I'll start with you, Martha. I know that both of you, your story as far as speaking sort of found you. I know a lot of speakers go out and try to create topics and find topics, but I think your life experience sort of presented your topic to you. So Martha, if you wouldn't mind starting for us and just giving us a little insight about how you got started in the speaking business.
Totally by accident. I started out in 2001, was going to be a personal coach, and in order to build a client base, I had heard of another coach that reviewed motivational books at Barnes & Noble, and I thought, oh, I can do that. Petrified of speaking. So that's why I wanted the one-to-one coaching. Well, I talked to Barnes & Noble here, and they loved it and said, oh, yeah, we'll have you do one book a month, and we'll promote it and promote you. And, of course, it was totally free. I just wanted the coaching clients. When I ever walked in Barnes & Noble about 2 weeks before my first book review, and I saw one of those huge bulletin boards, and it said, welcome, speaker, Martha Lanier. I couldn't read any farther. I turned around. I went back to the car, almost got sick, and I thought, what have I gotten myself into? Well, I only had about 12 guests that night, and we were in a corner of Barnes & Noble, but from that one book review, I was able to get my first coaching client, but someone else came up to me and said, oh, you need to talk to my manager. Love to have you do a program. You know, do you do workshops? And I was like, yes. Lie when you start, it helps. Anyway, to make a long story short, I gave my first speaking program to an apartment complex, huge complex, one of the Post properties. And met with them, and they, after we decided a date, and I think I listed maybe 15 different workshops I could do, and my thought was, let her choose it, and then I'll go do the research. And she chose one, and I was thrilled. We chose a date. I got ready to leave, and she said, wait a minute, we haven't talked about your fee. And I said, oh, fee. I'm thinking, what do I charge? I thought I was giving it for free. And I tossed out a number, and very, very low. And she said, sure, I'll cut you a check and mail it to you next week. And I thought, oh, my gosh, this is easy.
Wow.
I gave that one, and I literally was petrified every time I did a book review at Barnes & Noble. And when I gave this program, and a friend said, Martha, you need to go to Toastmasters. I had been too afraid to go to Toastmasters, but I did, and someone there who was a member of NSA Georgia suggested I go to NSA Georgia, and that sort of helped me get over the hump there, and I visited the first time and could not believe how friendly everyone was. And I remember they asked me what my topic was, and I said, choices, and they said, Martha, that's not a topic, and I said, well, that's what I speak on, because at the time, my only story was skydiving on my 50th birthday, and I just thought it was awesome about empowerment and stretching your limits. because I thought every speaker was like Tony Robbins. You know, we were all motivational keynote speakers, and I had my eyes opened wide, and it was unbelievable. That started it, and built my website, and it took a life of its own. And I was scared for many, many, many programs until I looked in the eyes of all female audience one day, and they just looked stressed and down. And I thought, oh my word, that was the changing moment for me, that it was no longer about what me and what they thought of me.
Right.
But I just wanted them to laugh and leave in a good mood. And and it's amazing, the nerves sort of left that day. I still get a little bit nervous, but not petrified like I did.
Yeah, I think we can all identify with that feeling. So thank you, Martha. Ken, how about you? I know it's infinitely interesting that, you know, as we evolve as people, we also evolve as speakers. And so our stories change, our life experiences change as well. So what was the starting point for you?
I had always been envious of a little boy or a little girl that's 7 years old who says she wants to be a fireman, wants to be a nurse, and then work their career to become that. I like I think maybe most people, had no idea what I wanted to do. And so I just, you know, go to school, do this, do that, go into this field, just what seemed like people told me to do.
Right.
But I really didn't know what I wanted to do. And then I had an accident, which I was able to use later. But it focused me in deciding what I wanted, you know, to really seek on a serious level what I wanted to do. And my wife and I went to a seminar at the Fox Theater, Positive Thinking Rally, Cabot Robert, Norma Vincent Peale, Zig Ziglar, and others. I'd really had never heard of a motivational speaker at that point. But that day, watching those guys on that platform, for the first time in my life, I knew what I wanted to do with my life. The vision was set. Now, I didn't know how to do it,
right?
But I knew what I wanted out of life. And so immediately after that, I went out and joined Toastmasters and started speaking. And then I was able to work my career at the time with AT&T and to get a position as a national sales instructor in Denver. And started speaking and doing some on the side. And like Martha was saying, one of my first speeches while I was still with AT&T doing this on the side, this woman called me about a program for her group and said, how much would you charge? I said, I don't know, $300. She called me back next day. She said, Ken, our budget's $500. That sounds better, yeah. But then the toughest decision was when I decided to leave AT&T and to go into this full time, to give up that perceived security. I had two kids, and my wife was not working. Both children were beneath the age of six. So it was scary. It was absolutely the toughest decision of my life, but it was the right decision.
Wow. Well, my story is kind of similar to yours, Ken. I was invited to a network marketing meeting by a friend, and I despised network marketing. I was 21 years old, you know, and I had heard all the stories about network marketing, and it's just not something that you want to do. And I was in, actually just got out of college at the time, and so my friend coerced me by saying that if I attended this meeting with him, then afterwards he would buy me a combo meal at Wendy's. So it's a true story, and money was kind of scarce at that time. So I, you know, the meal was definitely appealing. So I said, I can endure this 2 hours, you know, to get the meal. And when I went to that presentation, the speaker was so dynamic. And when he was walking across the stage and telling jokes, you know, about all the packages he had in his garage and all those types of things, and the audience was laughing, you know, I was looking at him and I said, I can do that, you know. And like you, I didn't know how to do it, but I knew that I could do it, and I knew that I felt something. And from there, I just kind of got in with both feet and been here ever since. So how about you, Kelly?
Well, mine started, I got involved in Toastmasters before I had the dream of being a professional speaker. And the 2003 conference was here in Atlanta, and I was able to attend, and there was a breakout session called How to Become a Professional Speaker. And I went and sat in the front row. And as he was talking about the things that he did to become a professional speaker, I thought, I could do that. I could do that. I could do that. So the dream was born, but then it kind of took a back burner for a few years. And in 2007 is when I started the adventure. And actually, John Schwartz, a member of NSA Georgia that's well known and loved by many of us, he was the person that invited me to NSA Georgia the first time. And I sat in that room, and I'm like, I'm with my people. And from there, it's just taken off. So.
Wow. So I guess I'm curious to know, and either Ken or Martha, you can take this question. At what point would you say that you arrived? I mean, I know we're continually striving and trying to get better in our professional, but at what point did you look in the mirror and say to yourself, wow, I am a professional? And how long did that take? You know, was that a 2-year process, a 5-year process, or was there maybe one event you did with a really large audience, and after that it's like, okay, I'm here, I'm comfortable here?
I think I thought I was there from the beginning once I got over the nerves, but it does take so much longer. I was still working a corporate job, and because they always say, don't give up that corporate job. Well, my corporate job began to give me up because my company started downsizing, and I was office manager in HR, and I was the one letting people go gradually. And I thought, you know, after a while, I'm not going to have anybody to manage. And so I did talk to my supervisor and told her, I took a deep breath and I said, I'm also starting a new career. And she also hired me to speak to a mentoring group that she had, which I thought was really cool because that gave me confidence that she believed in me as well. So it took a while to develop the programs. And again, like I developed the first workshop, anytime someone would say, hey, your keynote was great, but do you do a program on team building? And I gradually over years added more and more programs, although I feel they were good. They were not 100% me. I was making it work. And I remember one year putting on my goal board that I wanted to speak to an audience of over 1,000. Now, there's some speakers that speak to small groups, and they're fine with that, and some speak to thousands, and they don't enjoy the smaller. It's just a personal preference. But I put up there to speak to an audience of over 1,000, and I was hired literally out of the blue. They found my website, and the Navy hired me to give a program, an opening keynote, and there were 1,200 people there. And that was wow. Oh, man. It was so powerful, and it's videoed, and they were awesome to me. And I thought, hey, you know, met me at the airport. I didn't have to get a cab or something. It's like, okay, this is nice. This is the way I want it to be. So it doesn't happen overnight. I think we have to go through the different stages. And it's a learning process. We can learn from NSA Georgia programs and NSA and webinars, all of these things. But there's nothing that means any more than actual experience.
I agree.
In doing it.
I agree wholeheartedly. And I know a lot of our listeners have probably heard of Toastmasters in NSA Georgia. And just as a point of distinction, NSA Georgia focuses on the business of speaking. We also incorporate platform skills as well, but it's also the sales, the accounting, you know, the methodologies to be successful in business. And so that is one of the primary distinctions about NSA Georgia and why we are attractive to so many people. So Ken, let me ask you, what type of advice would you have for the beginning speaker that's thinking about taking the plunge? Maybe they have a professional career, or maybe they're between jobs right now, and there are certainly some things that they need to consider. So when you were making that decision, because it seems like, you know, that was a critical point for both of you, what were maybe one or two things that you considered during that process? Obviously, your family and being able to take care of your family, as you alluded to earlier. But just, I guess, beyond that, you know, what were some of the things you considered?
Well, I think any speaker needs to consider having a revenue stream.
Hence the professional part, right?
Right. You got to, I mean, it's a serious issue.
Right. Right up there with oxygen, right?
Right. And some have independently wealthy, can do it. Very few are right. Like that. Some have a spouse that works full time, gives them the luxury to be able to do that. But most aren't able to do it without some type of revenue stream. Some people, I had for myself, the first year, I had enough money I could live 1 year off of.
Right.
So,
right.
And I set a very nominal objective financially for the first year. And the second year, I wanted to be back to where I had been with AT&T, which I was able to do. And thinking about your first question to Martha. I never thought of it as when you have it made or when I made it now, but I sort of use monetary figures to determine. But I would say to the, as Martha indicated earlier, the word most people tell you, don't leave your day job until you got enough money coming in somewhere else. And that's not always feasible. Many times people lose their jobs and have to go. But that's the primary variable someone needs to think about. And some of the ways many speakers start is by doing what's called contract work.
Right.
ABC Company will hire trainers to train their people. And the pay is not as much as a full-time professional would make normally,
right,
but it's a regular income.
Mm-hmm.
And that will allow the person to have money coming in to support them. And then the additional benefit of that, which is critical, is the uptime.
Right.
On your feet speaking. I tell any speaker who comes into the business, your first year, rather than having a monetary objective, which is fine, the most important objective to have is how many speeches are you going to give that year?
Wow, that's good stuff.
there's no substitute,
right,
for being on your feet.
Good, understood. Well, I know that Kelly was interested in hearing some of your personal stories and how you were able to develop your topics, and so I'll throw it over to Kelly to talk a little bit about that.
Well, it occurred to me as Des and I were getting ready for this program that both of you have some very traumatic life events that happened to you. And I will confess that there have been times at NSA Georgia where I went, if I had just been kidnapped when I was in the Navy, or if somebody had blown my arm off, my goodness, I would have a great story to tell. And then, of course, I slapped myself across the face and said, be thankful that you have this great health and all these wonderful things have happened to you. Don't wish for bad problems. But both of you have had some really traumatic life experiences, and I don't know if all of our audience will have known that, but I'm curious about how you have incorporated that into your business and which happened first, the speaking business or the traumatic life experience, and just kind of how your stories mesh together there. How about we start with Martha?
Okay. I was looking at you like, you want me to go first? When I first started, I thought my story was very traumatic, and that my daughter invited me to go skydiving with her on my 50th birthday. That's how I celebrated it. And that really was a life-changing event for me. I, before that, was shy, lacked a lot of confidence. Believe it or not, I was more in the background. I did not like to be center of attention or I just didn't focus on that. And skydiving, my husband said my mind snapped on the way down. And I soon measured everything I did. If I was nervous or in an unusual situation that I thought was difficult, I'd say, if you can jump out of a perfectly good plane strapped to a guy you haven't known but 20 minutes, you can do anything. And that really was my benchmark. So when I started speaking, and I went skydiving in 97. And then when I started speaking in 01, that was my signature story. And believe it or not, I milked it for 30 to 45 minutes. And people really seemed to enjoy it. I had no problem with it. And I remember like Kelly sitting there thinking it in Georgia, man, all I got is my little skydiving story. And then all of a sudden in 2008, out of the blue, I'm like any other woman, I was blindsided. I was diagnosed with breast cancer and went through a double mastectomy and major reconstruction. And that changed a little bit the way I presented. I found that I shifted more to female audiences, although men could hear the program because they had a mother, a daughter, a sister, a spouse, someone that it could relate to. But I spoke about that, and then Lauren again came forth once I got a clean bill of health 6 months after my surgery, which was June of 08. In January of 08, I was given clearance. I could do anything physically I wanted to do. And Lauren jumped all over and said, oh, Liz, and I've been waiting for this. We think it'd be cool for you to do the Iron Girl Triathlon.
And those are your daughters, right?
Those are my daughters. Lauren's the one that talked me into the skydiving. And they had been talking to each other and talked me in. former non-athlete. I don't like to break a sweat, get sore, anything. And here they want me to do the Iron Girl Triathlon. And I thought about it, and then I thought, you know, I really want to do something big to celebrate my one-year anniversary. And also to show other women that just because we have some devastating news like that, it doesn't have to be devastating. It's all in our attitude. So my program began at that point to shift. And I talked about breast cancer. I talked about the Iron Girl Triathlete and what it meant to do that and what family meant to me to have the girls there with me. And then, as luck would have it, after that, I had a heart attack. Matter of fact, I had two attacks before I knew what it was. As I was lying in cardiac intensive care, arguing with them because I felt fine at the time, I was diagnosed with stress cardiomyopathy. I was under so much self-induced pressure to get my book published, which I had worked on, Pink Lemonade, and I wanted, it's about my breast cancer experience, and I wanted it to be published in June at the very latest, preferably May, and it just took so much longer, and I'm not the type of person to show anger or frustration. So I would talk to on the phone to different editors and publishers and be real nice, and I'd hang up the phone, and it was like, oh, why don't they do it fast enough? Don't they know that October's Breast Cancer Awareness Month and I need to market it and all, and they just don't understand it. And I could literally feel my blood pressure rising. Wow. Well, it got the best of me, and stress cardiomyopathy, all self-induced stress. And I first asked my cardiologist if the Iron Girl had anything to do with it. And he said, let's just say the Iron Girl may have saved your life. Because physically, I was in the best condition. I had trained for 6 months. So I didn't just all of a sudden go out and do the Iron Girl. Right. I had worked hard in training slowly to get to that point. So all of a sudden now I have breast cancer, I have the Iron Girl, I have heart attack, I have an author, and I have skydiving. So what I do is tie them all in together with the same key points. But an eye-opening thing that happened to me when I realized all of this, and this is just recently within this last year, is like, wait a minute, why am I doing so many programs when my passion is really to encourage women to manage their stress, to make their own choices? They're so powerful, and many don't even realize their power. They have the power of influencing other people, their children, their coworkers, their audiences. So I made a huge commitment this year, and I have basically one program that I can focus on stress reduction, I can focus on empowerment, or I can focus on influence. All three of those are from the same stories. It's just where the focus is. So I basically have one keynote. I have one audience. That's women. If men are in the audience, that's great. I have no problem, and they seem to enjoy it. But my focus is on all female audiences. And then the third area is either health and wellness. I speak for hospitals, for cancer events, American Heart Association, their Go Red for Women luncheons. And then in the corporate world, again, if they have a women's affinity group or anything like that. And it has been just so relieving and exciting to know that once I had a single focus, it really changed my business. The new website is coming up probably this week with all this focus here. I made big commitments this year, and it's paying off, so I love it.
Excellent. Thank you for sharing that that story. And Ken has got a very unique story for folks that haven't heard it before. Ken?
Well, my story really didn't put me in the business. That was not the
That's right. Now you had the thing happen.
Yeah,
I
accidentally shot myself, right?
Where did you accidentally
in the head.
True story.
And best thing that ever happened to me. In retrospect. But I did not associate that with the speaking when I first started, when I went to the Fox and saw those fabulous speakers. I just knew I wanted to be in that field. I didn't know what I'd be talking about at that point. And I got in, as I mentioned earlier, in Toastmasters, which I would encourage any person who's serious about their speaking skills to join Toastmasters. And while I was in Toastmasters, they had have a humor speech contest. And I thought, well, I got a funny story.
Not a lot of people would think of shooting themselves in the head as right. a funny and it story.
Was, but. It was not one I had planned out or anything. It usually would. I'd be sitting in a bar and people say, can't tell them about when you shot yourself. And it was like a 25-minute story at that point. But for Toastmasters, it had to be less than 7.5 minutes.
Wow.
So I had to trim it down to the essence for that. And I won their contest, and I went as high as you could go from the area to the district to the region. And I never thought that I was the best speaker. I just knew that no one else had a better story. because it's so memorable. Not everybody shoots himself in the head
and gets to
talk
about
it. And survives.
No, yeah.
And so I got a lot of confidence in telling that story. And while I was a trainer in Denver, I would always be invited to the other classes to tell that story and a couple others that I was telling at the time. And so that gave me some confidence that I could go out into this field. At least I had the ability, because I was on my feet every day. And so that sort of, but then I sort of like Martha trying to determine what I would speak on, what would be my topics and all this. And I think many of us indicate we probably have more than we have when we first start out. I remember putting my first brochure and I had all these topics. And they just had a topic at that point. And I figured, like Martha said, if they call me, then I'd develop something.
Right, right.
Of course, they were going to get basically the same speech no matter what topic they chose. But that's sort of, how I used that one story to sort of, after I got in, I found out, as we say in the business, signature stories.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's how you're known. And then I was able to work with that. And when I came up with my book, I decided that the title of my book would be Take Your Best Shot, mm-hmm. Turning Situations into Opportunities. Wow. How you can make something from it, sort of like Martha and how she helps people, talking about turning situations around to find the opportunity. And so the negative, as I tell people in my speeches, what started as a tragedy ended as a destiny.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Because one of the things we all try to do, no matter what kind of market we're in, is to differentiate ourselves from our competition. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying you got to shoot yourself in the head, but it works for me.
Wow. Well, one of the, I guess, trends that I noticed from you guys is that it seems like you started out with a multitude of topics, and it seems like now that, that your experience, you kind of narrowed that down to one thing, as Martha was just saying, and one focus. So what was that journey like, and what advice would you have for beginning speakers who, they want to get into the business and speak about every topic under the sun, they just want to speak, as opposed to being more focused and being an expert in one area?
Well, one of the things that I remember a very successful speaker, I'm not going to say his name, but I remember he said when he first started out, he would advertise, we'll speak any topic. And a lot of people really think, I'm just a good speaker. It doesn't matter what
right,
topic is.
Right.
But mm-hmm. we realize after you've been in the business a number of years that if you say that you can speak on 100 different topics, audiences or buyers will begin to think, wait a minute.
Right.
How can somebody be that good on every topic?
Right.
And you lose credibility. Mm-hmm. And I think that forces people to begin to narrow it down to a few
right.
topics.
Right.
Someone explained it to me this way, excuse me, and it just made sense. Let's say that you were diagnosed with a specific kind of brain tumor. Would you go to an internist who does brain surgery, orthopedics, ENT, all of that? I don't think so. Would you go just to a brain surgeon? That's a better choice. Or would you keep searching until you found a neurosurgeon who specialized in surgery to treat and remove the tumor you had?
Yeah.
To me, that says it all. Wow. That's being known as an expert in your field. And I believe that majority of meeting planners think this way.
Right.
They may not want, even though you could speak on a lot of things, that's not your expertise. And I believe, honestly, that what comes with the expertise is the heart and the passion.
Right.
I do not speak from a scripted script. my stories are mine. The emotion is there. And I think when we speak from our heart, the audience feels that, and that's the takeaway. It's believable then because of the takeaway. But specializing to me, once it was explained that way, it just made sense.
Wow. So it sounds like deep is definitely better than wide when it comes to speaking business. Well, we certainly appreciate you sharing your personal stories. And if we could shift gears a little bit and just talk about the industry itself and how the industry has changed over the years. Obviously, both of you are tenured speakers. And so you have seen different things come and go, and probably many speakers come and go. So I'm curious to know off the top, just what are some of the major changes you've seen over the years in terms of trends in the speaking business? And then we'll come back and talk about maybe some specifics and try to offer some tips and skills for a range of speakers from the beginner all the way to the seasoned speaker like yourself. So I'll start with you, Ken.
Well, in technology, I'll just start there because that's so easy. When I first got in the business, I remember people say, well, you really aren't serious about being a professional speaker if you don't have a fax machine. And now most speakers don't even know what a fax machine is. So the technology has just giantly changed. Where when I first started, brochures were critical.
Right.
Everybody had to have one, mail it out to folks. In fact, I remember the first month I was in the business, I started calling people looking for speaking opportunities, and people said, well, that sounds real good. Send me some material. And I don't have any material. So the second month, I developed my brochure. So at least I'd have something to send them.
Right.
But the technology has changed so much that it's all done on the Internet with sending whatever you want to send or anything else. You don't have to. It's cheaper in a lot of ways. You don't have to have that printing cost. So that's one of the biggest changes, and there's some others, but I'll let you take it, Martha.
I remember I was invited to speak at the National SHRM Convention in Las Vegas, like over 10,000 people there, and I gave two programs, and I think one audience had like 800 people in it, and another one had 600. And after you speak, they send you the comments. Well, you would not believe how many said, we're so disappointed she gave a good program, but she didn't have PowerPoint. Now, granted, this was quite some time ago. This was probably, I can't remember, 04, 05. I was lucky to have been invited, and what an honor. But I thought, I had never seen that many PowerPoint presentations that somehow didn't end up with a glitch. Either it got locked up or didn't advance something, and I thought, I just don't want to go there. Well, that was eye-opening. I think now back on it, it is our audience and the age levels. Now, this is not totally across the board because there are some traditionalists who are very savvy technically and some Gen Ys, although I doubt there are very many that are not. But it sort of forced me to go into PowerPoint. But again, I didn't want to be locked into having to follow a script with the PowerPoint. Right. And what I put on each one, if I spoke on influence, the power of influence, I didn't want to have to remember what was on the slide. And I just, one of my pet peeves is for a speaker to turn around and look at the slide. That is a no-no. You should know what's up there. So I thought, okay, now all of my slides are pictures that reinforce my stories, whether or not it's Lauren and I hugging after skydiving or crossing the finish line of the Iron Girl. They all have stories, back the stories. So I thought, I erase the content, the text. So my slides are totally pictures, and I don't have to worry with that. But technology, I believe, has really changed our industry. I fought it for so long at my age. I thought, I just can't get into it. And then I thought, you know what? I used to say I was technically challenged. Now I'm a technical student. And I try and learn as much as I can because I know this is the direction we're going in. I have experienced firsthand that meeting planners are getting younger. A lot of times they don't even want to talk on the phone. I'll call them and they won't return my calls always. So I'll think, okay, I'll send them an email. And sometimes I get an email back. But I have learned, very first conversation, I ask for their cell phone number just in case I need to get in touch with them. And oftentimes I will text them, and I mean immediately they will text back. Then I realized with social media, we just need to have our sites out there, whether it's LinkedIn or Facebook. I'm getting ready to work with Corey Perlman because he has a e-boot camp that helps with just about everything. He'll look at your website to see if it is going to keep meeting planners on your site. Mm-hmm. Also, the different YouTube channel. I have a YouTube channel, but I don't feel I probably am maximizing it like I could. So I'm going for help with that. And he'll help with LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter. Google Plus is big. All of those things, I know enough to be dangerous with them.
Right.
But I know they're so powerful. And that's why I want to learn more about it.
Good. Well, how about, I know video is a huge thing. Do you guys remember when video first broke on the scene in terms of the speaking industry? I know that video is so important to us now when people want to see you. You know, not only do they want the brochures, as Ken said, but they want to see you in action. So do you remember that point when they sort of video came on the scene?
I sure do. In fact, I was so fortunate. The very first speech, professional speech I gave after I left, one on my own, was one here in Atlanta. And Mike Ditka of Chicago Bears was speaking ahead of me. And so they had a big camera crew for him. And so I talked to the group and told them to keep the camera crew going for me.
Right.
At which they did. And when it was over, they just handed me the video.
Wow.
That's the greatest benefit I ever got out of one presentation because I started using it immediately. And today, and anybody will tell you, you have to have a video. Now, you can get hired without one if someone has seen you speak. Mm-hmm. But people don't like to step too far out on the limb not knowing what you will be like.
Right, right.
And there's no substitute other than being there for a video of seeing. And there are multiple ways you can do them, different things. And the technology of how people use videos has changed a lot. But
absolutely,
having a video is just a critical piece. There are some successful people without it, but it's very, very difficult to make a go of it without a good video.
Right.
I'm curious, because you guys got in the speaking business before the internet was the default place that you went to find anything, what was the transition like for you going from the analog world to the digital world and websites and stuff, and how do you think today's speaker is influenced by the fact that people shop online for speakers?
I think the website is critical. That is my number one marketing tool, and I'd say majority of the time I am booked as a result of my website. Second is referrals. Someone either in my audience or someone referred who was in the audience refers to someone else. So when I started in 2001 and put up a website, the website business was there. So I didn't have to think about anything else. I sort of hit it at a good time.
Gotcha.
Because I didn't know any different. But since then, I mention video in the program every time I talk to a meeting planner and we get to the point to sign a contract. I will say, you know, is the program going to be videoed? And I don't know, I guess we could. And I said, well, I would like that very much. And so, you know, sometimes all we have to do is ask. Mm-hmm. And so I have a lot of videos from that and use the short footage and made it into video demo. Now I understand that meeting planners are wanting longer segments so they can see specific sections of your program. It's not uncommon for them to want to see 12 to 15 minutes. Mm. So that I'm working on now, re-going through some of those and also the more recent videos. But another thing is that I do video blogs now, and some written and some video, which is great because, again, that lets meeting planners see you, hear what you sound like. Mm-hmm. You know, someone may not, my southern accent may not appeal to them. Then again, if they're having a conference in Atlanta, then they may want that. But at least they know what I sound like. So I believe video is very, very important. And then during the last year, I started offering to do a marketing video for them, for their website and their social media. And a matter of fact, when we leave here, I'm going to Emory Adventist Hospital to shoot a segment for them. And they're not but about a minute long. But it's a great marketing tool on their website to be able to introduce a speaker for their event so that the audience can see, hey, yeah, you know, I want to come hear her. So there's so many more ways that we can use video today and so many programs to edit it ourselves or to use professionals to do it. It's wide open.
I'd like to add what Martha was saying about longer clips. A lot of the buyers are aware that somebody may be good for 2 or 3 minutes, but can he or she hold the audience for a full presentation? That's one of the reasons they're looking for longer clips. And what we find out today with their websites, many speakers are extremely fabulous marketing their skills. Their websites are great. I mean, they look fabulous. But they aren't necessarily as great when they get on the platform. And that will hurt you. It hurts the whole industry. I remember when I first got into business, I asked a speaker friend, I said, George, how's your brochure? Oh, he said, my brochure is really good. He says, the word of mouth is killing me. And that's the ultimate. It's what does people, what do they say about after you've given the presentation? Is it as good as advertised?
Makes sense. Oh, I guess with all this push for technology, I'm curious to know, do you guys think there are any diminishing returns with technology? Obviously, you lose some of the personal touch, kind of the human touch. So with this push for technology, do you see like any pertinent things or things maybe from, I'll just say, the good old days? Do you see any things that have fallen through the cracks and sort of changed the industry and you kind of wish, wow, I wish those things were still around, whether it be phone conversations or just, you know, just a more intimate dealing with the individuals you're doing business with?
Well, I think on a larger scale, many of us have seen their reduction of meetings. More corporations are saying, well, we really don't need to bring everybody in. Let's do teleconferencing or something. And so I certainly think it has hurt the number of meetings. Okay. And there still are meetings, thank God, and there's some you can never really do away completely with face-to-face. Some organizations, if they don't get together, then they lose their base.
Right, exactly.
And that so that will always, in my opinion, create a need to have a live speaker at the event.
Okay.
Personally, I don't think we can ever replace personal contact, meaning face-to-face or voice-to-voice. You can send an email or a text, and you never know the mood of the sender or the recipient. And that's lost. It's like the soft skills we just don't have. But if that's the direction everyone is going in, again, an age thing, I go with it.
Right.
But I really hate to see that emotional part not be in it, because speaking to a meeting planner, I think a speaker can express so much more. They can show excitement. There's just so much that the voice can do, and that is totally flat in an email. It's flat on just reading a website. That's why the videos are important. But, yeah, I'd love to see the soft skills come back. I really do. I think it's important.
Right. Yeah, and I can just – a perfect example of that is how beautiful Martha looks today. And for those of you who can't see her, you just can't put into words how beautiful she looks
she
with her.
But please stop right there.
Yeah, well, I thank you guys for sharing your insights. And I guess one of the things that sort of stood out to me right there is it seems like, I won't say gone are the days, but it seems like less and less are the days where speakers come in and they just do the one huge speech and they make all this money. It seems like now with, as Ken alluded to, with the evolution of technology, you know, it becomes more of an experience for the people that you do business with, and the speech just becomes a part of that process. So maybe, for example, you come in and you do a keynote speech and then they want you to come back and work with their leaders to do some coaching or consulting or something like that. So have you noticed that sort of shift in terms of the the industry. And I know in particular with the recession and after September 11th of 2001, certainly everything changed a little bit. So I guess what are some of the differences there in terms of how things were and how they are today?
I think a lot depends on your program and your content. For instance, when I give my program, it's one that I wouldn't go back and give the next year to the same audience because all of the stories are so memorable that they remember. I mean, I have women come up to me and say, "Ah, oh, you doing the skydiving story today? I heard you 6 years ago. Please tell me you're going to do it." And so a lot of that is familiar. Also, I think maybe the corporate world may be a little bit different. A lot of the audiences that I speak to are open to the public. They may be fundraisers or benefits, particularly those on cancer and the Go Red for Women, the heart attack. They're a totally different audience where I don't have the ability to go back because they're not all together ever again.
Right.
It's a different audience every single time. But obviously the coaching is there. I do offer a follow-up teleseminar or a call where attendees can call in just to say how are they doing on some of the things that they took home with them that they learned or changes that they're going to make, lifestyle changes. How are they managing their stress? Do they have comments? Do they want that boost, a pat on the back? A lot of women really want to share, hey, this is what I did. Other women really want to hear the takeaways that other women had to see, you know, they're willing to try too. So I think to leave that door wide open, and particularly with technology today, there's so many things we can do with webinars and the teleseminars. There's almost no reason not to do it. It's if the demand is there, be open and available.
And I would say that it's not just the industry begging for it as much as it is the speakers becoming aware, hey, wait a minute, I think I can provide more services than just a keynote speech.
Right.
So that's a reason you see a lot more of it as well.
Okay, sounds good. Total shift of gears here. and I know you guys are familiar with the saying, when life gives you lemons, you want to make lemonade. So I'm curious to know if you have sort of a favorite flop where you thought something went horribly wrong, and in the end, it turned out to be maybe you learned a valuable lesson or it was just a good experience and not exactly, you know, what you thought. For example, I did a speech and I felt so horrible after it was over. I didn't feel I had given my best to the audience. The speech was videotaped. And when I went back to look at the speech, I learned so many of the reasons I was able to see, you know, so many of the reasons why I didn't meet my expectation. Of course, I felt horrible about my performance, but I learned in the process, and those things I have never done again. And so I'm curious to know if along your journey you've had similar experiences or one that stands out to you.
I do. Shortly after I started speaking, this was probably in the first year, and of course, the first couple of years, anyone who asked me to speak, I did. So I spoke to, I think, every Rotary, Civitan, every service club there was. And I remember I was asked to speak, and it was about 12 attorneys.
Wow.
All male, which I have nothing against men, but I was not prepared for that. And I learned that, I mean, it's like the stories were flat. They just didn't laugh or get into it. And then your mouth keeps going, but your mind is like, okay, they're not with me. What am I going to try now? You know, when is this going to be over? And it was very painful. But the good thing is, I learned a valuable lesson from it. Know your audience, that you don't just speak to anyone. You speak to an audience who can relate to what you have to say, and they'll have value in it and take away. So it was eye-opening there. Yeah.
For me, it was a little different. I had some programs that went better than others, and I began to look back for about a year on every single one of the programs that did not go as well as I would have liked. I realized it was a common denominator. Every single one, the lighting was poor.
Wow.
Where I'd be speaking it in the evenings and they'd have the lights down for man, I don't know what reasons, but yeah. Atmosphere. You know,
setting the mood.
Setting the mood. And I'd use, like most speakers, a lot of facial expression. And I would say I lose 40% of my effectiveness.
Wow.
If they can't see the facial expressions.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the common denominator. After that, that's a biggie for me. I make sure that the lighting is going to be such that people can pick up on the facial expressions.
Yeah, I agree with you totally, because I'm very animated when I speak. The larger the audience, the larger the animation. And I use a lot of facial expressions, and particularly if it's being videoed, I'll say, when I start with the facial expressions, zone in, you know, quickly, so yeah. that it will show up, particularly if they have it on an IMAX screen. You want the people in the back to be able to see that. But I found I go early. I'm always the first one there, and I will walk the platform or the area and look up and see where the lights are. But there are a lot of times, and I know Ken feels this too, we don't have any control in it, because if it's in a large banquet room and there's 600 people in there at round tables, which spreads them even farther back, it's very difficult. But they're all ceiling can lights. And, you know, it's hard to say, excuse me, but I really need spotlights on me so that my facial expressions will show. But I think it's important to get on that platform and see where those lights are and try and hold my head up a little bit just so the more light will help. But that's a lot to think about out there. But if it's time for those facial expressions, we have a tendency, I do, to look down more at the audience, and I'll try and hold head up. But I agree, Ken, the lighting is a huge factor when it comes to a speaker who does use facial expressions.
Which brings up the total environment in general.
Mm-hmm.
One of the mistakes that I see that meeting planners make is that they will have the platform where we will be speaking sometimes 25 feet from the first table. And that is a killer. The more distance you have between the speaker and the audience, the more difficult it is to connect, to build energy. And sometimes it's difficult to get them to change anything, particularly if you're on the third day or something, they've had it set up that way. But as speakers, we learn little tricks over the years to change things. What I do when I see that, if I get a chance that early that morning, again, like Martha, I'm always going to be in there early, is I'll have them put what I call a little Miss America walk, you know, to just take a couple of podiums and bring them out, get me within 5 feet of the first table. And that makes all the difference in the world in connecting. Yes. Now, sometimes you know you get in situations where you can't make any changes.
Mm-hmm.
But over the years, I think most speakers learn what would be the ideal setup.
Right.
And then you work to that as much as you can. If you can't do anything about it, you can't. But at least you know what you would like to have done if you get the opportunity.
Right. And I think it's the way it's presented to the meeting planners as well. When I get to the point after I'm booked and we are a couple of months prior to the event, I do have a list that I go over with them, whether or not I prefer a lavalier mic, that way I can replace it with my over-the-ear mic, and we will test both of those, and I'll let them choose, because sometimes their confidence level may be higher on their own lapel mic or their AVs team. Other times they will go with the over-the-ear mic and really like it. But I explain, you know, when you set up your room, I know this is going to be a table of, rounds, but please put them within 6 feet of where I'll be speaking the platform. And I'll say, let me explain to you why. Because you lose the energy in the room. They can't see the faces. And a lot of times, if you just explain to the meeting planners why, and I went to one event, and it was a huge banquet hall, and they did not have the registration they thought. So what they did was spread out tables so the room did not look empty. And thank goodness I got there early, and I said, you know what, I want this to be as successful for you as possible, and I think one way we can do that is if we tighten these tables. Also chairs that if it's theater style and there are a lot of elbow room in between, I said, we need to tighten those because the energy level will rise in the room. The tighter the audience is, the closer they are together, the more spontaneous the laughter. And if I go in and I mention chevron to them, whether the outer seats are curved, and if I get there and they're not chevron, and I've explained chevron, if someone else has set the room, I'll get there early, and as soon as the meeting planner gets there, I said, yeah, do you mind if we just sort of pull these outer chairs in? And it just softens the feel for the group. And I'll just roll up my sleeves and start doing it. And, you know, they'll usually have somebody help me. But a lot of times they just don't know. And I think that's our responsibility as a speaker to share not just what we request, but why. And once they understand that, then they're more in agreement. Plus, I think it lets them know that we are true professionals. This isn't the first time we've done.
Right.
So, you know, and based on experience over the years. And I think that's a big plus.
Well, something that you both have a real strength in is your storytelling abilities. What tips would you have for speakers to improve their stories? Especially, you guys are so fabulous. How'd you get like that?
Well, one of the things I would say, the first National Speaker Association meeting I ever went to, Cabot Robert, the founder, was giving a breakout session. And he said to us that you cannot begin to tell a story, or joke for that matter, until you've told it 50 times. And I thought to myself, nah, it'll be 50 times, but, you know, two or three times, and I can rock and roll with it. I was too ignorant at the time to understand what he was saying. What he was saying was that you cannot maximize that story until you've told it 50 times. You don't know when to duck your shoulder, look to the left or right. And so much of those things that you add to the story, you don't make them up. You accidentally do it during a speech, and you see how it resonates with the audience. And you put it in the back of your mind, I'll do that next time. Mm-hmm. And so the story evolves in how you deliver it, where you slow down, where you pause doubly long. There's so many extras that go into a story. It's just not the same, even if the essence is the same, but it changes in delivery methodology so it can really work with the audience. So I would always say to anyone, start telling that story over and over and over again.
Excellent.
Very definitely so. I have, over the years, worked with coaches. I have learned from speakers who have come into NSA Georgia and the NSA conferences. If we don't pick up but one or two key tidbits, that can make a total change in the presentation. I know when I first started speaking, believe it or not, I spoke really fast and I tried to get as much in as I could. I didn't have as many pauses, although I knew they were important. When I learned that a pause gave the audience a chance to digest what you had just said, now it's easy, and I don't feel like that open air is a bad thing. It's really a good thing. So with those, it has helped. And I remember, Ken, the same thing when I was speaking to the Navy audience, 1,200, and in the skydiving story, I said something about jumping out of a plane, and it was supposed to be, in my mind, a perfectly good plane. So when I said, hey, you know, if I can jump out of a plane, a perfectly good plane, the audience cracked up, and all of a sudden in my mind, it's like, ooh, leave that in.
Yeah.
So it appears that it's spontaneous, but it really isn't. It's totally planned, the timing. So we learn. That's why it's so important to speak as much as we can, because we learn from every single program we give. And that's why it's good. I always say I tithe back my business, so I will save dates or save engagements so many a year to be able to do for benefits people that maybe don't have any budget whatsoever. And I also, that's a good time for me to put in some more information and test it out or reword some of the stories. And so it's a win for them, but it's also a win for me.
There's no saying I heard the first year I was in the business, the question was asked, do you have to be funny in order to be a professional speaker? And the answer was, no, only if you want to get paid. Well, where there's a lot of truth to that, I really don't believe a person has to be funny, but he or she definitely has to be entertaining. Mm-hmm. And for most of us, the easiest way is to provide some kind of levity, humor.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But there are other ways. There are people who sing. They're different. But it's got to be entertaining. And I think you started out by asking about stories. That's the best way people remember.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we go have our next door neighbor will go to attend a conference somewhere and come back and say, "Oh, Ken, I heard the greatest speaker of my life. She was wonderful." Mm-hmm. "What was her name?" They never remember a speaker's name.
Right.
And so I will say, "Well, what she? Oh, she told this story of, you know." Then I know exactly who the speaker is. We're known by our stories, and so it's just we have to have them. And if you, all of the great teachers use stories. And if you're not using stories, I can't imagine it'd be almost impossible to be successful in this field without stories.
Right.
Absolutely.
Well, it's such a privilege to be in the presence of greatness, and I'm thankful to Business Radio X for arranging this collaboration with NSA Georgia. And I'll be candid here. I'm trying to focus on the interview, but I'm also taking notes over here as these two individuals speak. And I guess one of the things that's most interesting to me and the mark of a true professional is the level of detail that is paid attention to in terms of the craft, you know, the facial expressions and how far the audience is, from the presenter. And those are things that most people, when they speak, you know, they just don't think about. But those are sort of the intangibles that I've been privileged to learn from you and other people at NSA Georgia that truly separate you and mark you as a professional. So on that note, I'd like to know, do you have a word of advice for your fellow veteran speakers? So for those people who are seasoned and been around for a while and maybe taking a few minutes to tune into this radio show, what advice would you have for them? I know a lot of times it's more in the area of technology and just fight through and try to stay with the technology. But what would you say to those people who've been around the industry and seen a lot of changes and are still in the game but just could use a little nudging or some word of advice from a peer?
I would say commit to being a lifelong learner. I don't think I will ever finish learning everything there is about this business. It is an awesome business, and it's huge. There's so much to learn. And just to keep your mind open and not say, "Oh, well, I don't need that in my program," or "I don't need that." Learn what it is. Get familiar with different things. Learn from teleseminars. As I said, NSA Georgia has been the biggest boost for my career. Every single meeting, I have the biggest takeaways. Again, it might not be a long list. I used to go to learn as much as I possibly could. Now I think about, all right, what are the one, two, or three things that I can implement that will make a difference? And the other thing is to get involved. They say you learn, your learning increases as you teach. And so to work with or be available to some of the emerging speakers, I think is a great way to learn, to get involved actively. I have been on 5 executive boards with NSA Georgia, and I'll let you know that was not on my radar when I first joined. I was so green and had so much to learn. But by being on the board and learning more and getting to know other speakers, other professional speakers, and I learned today from the experienced professional speakers, but I also learn from the emerging speakers because they come with new, fresh ideas. And so that's one of the beauties of NSA Georgia is we are not out of one mold. There are just so many different speakers out there, and we all can learn from each other. So get involved, get on the board, volunteer, because the more you participate, the more you learn. And with NSA Georgia, you expand your friendships and your friends. The other professional speakers know your topic and what you speak on. And I've even traded back and forth. When someone asked me for an engagement, I couldn't do it. I knew exactly who. I said, "You know what, I can't do it, but I know someone who would be awesome." And so that's the beauty of the membership at NSA Georgia as well. It's a great resource.
Well, everything is changing so much. I remember hearing a while back that if you could measure information in inches, from the beginning of time to 1860, it would be approximately 1 inch in height. And from 1860 to 1960, it would have grown to 4 inches in height. From 1960 to 1980, it would have grown to the height of the Washington Monument. Huh. From 1980 to 1984, it doubled. And we're told today it's doubling every 9 days.
Wow.
So it's changing. The world is changing around us, and right. We have to be adept at being able to use that change to help us, not to hurt us. Mm. I was thinking what Martha was saying earlier, one of the things that always encourage everybody to do is to have everything that you can videotaped. Because you can never have too much footage for your websites and for different things. We're always needing more footage. And part of that gives you the opportunity to go back and analyze your own speeches.
Definitely.
And we find out that many times we're saying some things and doing some things that we don't know we are. And that can keep us back on track by actually looking at it as opposed to just thinking we know what we did. We need to find out if we know what we did.
That's so true. Some are good and some aren't. And you say, I can't believe I did that. Or I can't believe I stood that way. It's like, okay, note to self, I will not do that again. But if we didn't have the opportunity to see ourselves on the video, even if it's not being professionally videoed, hey, with smartphones now, and you can even get a stand for it, put it on a table right in front of you and tell the people, hey, do you mind if I do this? I want to video my program. Oh, man, you have an instant videographer right there who's going to make sure it's all going. So there's really no excuse today not to have a video of a program and at the very least an audio. I used to have audios of all my programs. I wore this rather large recorder on a belt clip and I could, on the way home, I couldn't wait to get in the car and listen to it and see what I'd said. And that's where you learn what's really good and what really needs to be cut next time.
Wow. Well, as we bring our interview to a close here, I hate to do that, but what I'm going to do is ask you to share, what is the one thing about NSA Georgia that would make you encourage other people to join? So, I mean, what is the greatest gift or the greatest value that you've gotten from the organization? And I'll start first and then go to Kelly, and then we can go to Martha and end with you, Ken. And for me, I guess I'm still going through the process right now. Initially, I joined NSA Georgia because I wanted to be among the best speakers. And so when I came to my first NSA Georgia meeting, you know, it was glaringly obvious to me that these people are a lot better than me. So I need to hang around here so that I can learn from them. And now, as I'm learning the speaking business and my platform skills are improving, I still have a long way to go in terms of that improvement. But the interesting thing that came about for me in terms of NSA Georgia is just the leadership opportunity, as Martha said, and serving on the board. And so having an opportunity to lead with consequences and affecting the lives of other people in their business has been a tremendous value that NSA Georgia has afforded me. It's something that I didn't anticipate, but I will be forever grateful for. And it just seems to keep on giving. So that would be my one tip or one word of advice for a reason to join NSA Georgia. How about you, Kelly?
For me, it was really the entrepreneurial business knowledge. I knew a lot about being in a business and running a business and managing things related to that from a company perspective. But when you are an entrepreneur and doing it yourself, it is a whole different ballgame. And so for me, just in addition to what Des has mentioned already, those were fabulous things for me too. But I really needed to understand the business aspects and how to make it a profession as opposed to just a hobby.
I agree with all of those. The business of speaking, which I had no real entrepreneurial business sense, the educational opportunities are endless, the camaraderie of all of the members. And I consider NSA Georgia my extended family. I'll never, ever, till the day I die, forget I came to the NSA Georgia meeting about 2.5 weeks after my mastectomy and Tram, and my husband said, you're going to drive. I drove 1 hour, and I thought, if I don't stay but an hour, I just really want to see my friends. And we did pass the mic back then, and I was about 3/4 of the way back in the room, and it got to my turn, and someone handed me the mic, and I slowly stood up, and I just said, I'm Martha Lanier. And I'll never forget the feeling. The room literally exploded. And the support I had from friends there. I felt sorry for visitors. They had no idea what was going on. But that meant so much to me. We are family. And no matter what you go through, there are people who will go beyond business and just as a good friend support you. And I don't know of any other profession where there are people like that. Other members who support you. So to me, that means everything.
When I left corporate America, one of the things I missed most by working by myself was I missed going in on Monday mornings and what you do this weekend.
Talking at the cooler.
When you're in business by yourself, Christmas parties are boring as hell. And so that's picking up on what Martha was saying, the camaraderie and the friend that we've developed over the years. It's just so meaningful. It just matters a lot. And then the business side of it, I tell anybody who's serious about going in this business that you can be attending a meeting and not even inside, outside, and I'm talking when we have a break, and you're chatting with someone, and you say, I'm thinking about doing X. And they'll say, no, you don't want to do X. You want to do Y. And that 30-second conversation can save you $25,000. It's absolutely amazing. I was told when I first got in, if you aspire in a particular field, then what you should do is hang around people who already are a success in that field. And that's what NSA offers most of us, are other people who've already done it and who are willing to help you and share with you what they've learned through experience.
Well, Martha, we thank you and Ken for being our guest and sharing your time and wisdom for us, and also for the great contributions that you've made to NSA Georgia over the years, making it the prestigious organization that it has been for so long. And for those of our listeners out there, we're all about the community of speaking about education and entrepreneurial business knowledge and continuing to learn and continuing to build. We thank you to Business Radio X for the partnership and being able to get the good word out to people. Please take a look at our website. It's www.nsageorgia.org, and you can join us every third Saturday of the month. And until next time, we look forward to speaking with you.